This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, cutting-edge thinking for being youthful at every age. On each program, I interview experts on what it takes to live longer, healthier, and happier. Our program takes a holistic approach in addressing anti-aging psychology, medicine, alternative medicine, fitness, nutrition, and wellness. Our emphasis is on innovative thinking and practices that have solid data and results. In Woody Allen's movie Bananas, Woody Allen's character Feeling Mellish has become El Presidente of San Marcos, an imaginary country, and he's greeted at the airport by a U.S. State Department interpreter. Well, El Presidente speaks perfect English, and the interpreter speaks broken English, but he still insists on interpreting. It reminds me a lot of personal trainers. I think we know how to count to 20. The weight equipment isn't that complicated. And if the trainer holds our hand while we're on the treadmill, it's going to slow us down. Do we really need a personal trainer? Sports medicine physician Dr. Mark Paulson and personal trainer Ashley Marriott say in most cases we should dump the trainer and do it ourselves. Hence the title of their brand new book, Dump Your Trainer. Today we'll take a look at how to be your own personal trainer, save a lot of money, and probably get a lot better results. Dr. Paulson and Ashley Marriott, welcome.
Thank you.
Millions of people watch Oprah, and she can get the best trainers, the best physicians, the best nutritionist in the world. Is she smart like a fox and knows that crash diets and weight loss and weight gain makes for good television, or is she just making a lot of bad decisions?
Well, I think that that is the essence of the myth of personal training, is that no matter who that dynamic person is that you think, you know, would solve the problem, it's got to be your own relationship to physical activity, movement, and, you know, finding a diet, you know, that you can live with. It becomes a lifestyle choice. And I think looking for a magic solution, and, you know, clearly she's a very intelligent, profoundly brilliant woman, but she hasn't found that right equation for her where physical fitness is just something she learns to incorporate every day.
So part of it is she's looking for the magic answer, and part of it is she hasn't found the fit yet.
Well, I'm not sure that's true. I think, number one, first of all, my concern with Oprah is that she has such a wide audience and she's sending out the wrong message. But for a while there, Oprah did pretty well. She had basically done what she should have done. She incorporated diet and exercise into her lifestyle on a daily basis, and it worked. But the problem was she didn't do it for life. And so she's basically fallen out of it. And then, even worse, she's gone out and sent the wrong message about all these fad diets as well, including the one she just went through.
What did she just go through?
This was something called the Vegan Cleanse Diet.
So what advice would you give her?
I think she needs to get back on the train. She needs to basically understand that diet, especially exercise, are something that she has to incorporate into her daily life as a regular part of her daily life. And this is extremely important, and far more important than improving her ratings or perhaps making a few extra dollars.
What other kind of mistakes have you seen some of the big movie stars make? Both of you are in the Los Angeles area?
Yes. Very often I see really extreme exercise and diet programs for fitting into a dress for a certain event, or with actresses I've worked with for a certain role. Of course, there are many dangers to their physical health, but also psychologically. It's really troubling to see someone that puts this, you know, really, really restrictive burden on themselves to lose, you know, maybe 20 pounds in a one-month period of time, which is unrealistic and dangerous for someone that's usually doesn't have that much weight to lose in the beginning. I think it also sets up a really sad role model for people that say, oh, wow, how did they do that? Oh, that was their magic trainer that they had. No, that was a really dangerous extreme diet or a high-profile role. So it does perpetuate this myth of the magic trainer or the magic program, when really it's just an extreme lifestyle.
So just like we look at the magazine covers and think we're supposed to look like that when it's not real, they're doing extreme things to look good on the movie set, but it's not a healthy life.
Exactly. And then you see the media loves to say, you know, then catch the next photo of them maybe 30 days later when they've put on 20 plus 10 more and say, oh, look, they're terrible. Look what they're doing now. So it's kind of a really sick situation where you stir them up because they've, you know, done something very unattainable. And then when they go back to trying to live a normal life, they obviously can't maintain that.
Mm. Yeah, or they're doing things that they're not admitting to. For instance, I'm not going to mention the name, but there's a person on a very popular TV show whose signature ripped abdomen look everybody seems to be admiring. But if I look at her lower extremities, they look like they have extensive edema. To me, that's an indication of perhaps she went ahead and had a little bit too much surgery done and destroyed her lymphatic.
Hmm. Dr. Paulson, you lost 50 pounds and kept it off for 8 years. What got you to the point where you needed to lose 50 pounds?
Oh, well, I just took a look in the mirror and realized I had a problem.
Was that before you got into sports medicine, or?
No, that was actually afterwards. I went through a difficult time in my life, like everybody, you know, can go through. And during that time, my solution to, I don't know, I guess you would call it depression, was to eat and not exercise. And so it was amazing how quickly that things turn around, but I gained a lot of weight in a very short period of time.
So most of your life you were at a pretty healthy weight.
Oh, yeah.
And Ashley, it's hard for me to believe, but you say you lost 40 pounds. How did you get 40 pounds too heavy?
Well, actually, that was at a time where I was dancing professionally, and although dancing is good exercise, it really can be a lot of standing, learning routines. And unless it's nonstop, you know, that you're in a show you're doing every night of the week, when you're just learning pieces, you're not doing a lot of cardiovascular work. So that's what inspired me to say, why, if you're in a dance studio 8 hours a day, why aren't you getting enough exercise? And that really is because you're not getting that heart rate up and you're not burning enough calories through something that's more aggressive, walking, hiking, jogging, those things. And you'll see that often, unless it's, you know, an athletic sport where someone is really running up and down the court, that people can be athletes and not necessarily be thin or even at a healthy weight.
And this is really the core of your message, that the biggest factor in weight loss and in being healthy is aerobic and not so much the strength training.
Yes.
Well, you know, and that's true, but also we also like to emphasize that strength training is extremely important as well. You know, especially in people in an aging population where you want to keep your bone density up and you want to keep your muscles from atrophying. Yes, aerobics is extremely important, but also strengthening as well.
And I think that the problem with the idea of strength training in a personal training model is it's not really holistic. It's, you know, you go in and sometimes the session revolves around gym equipment. When I say that a well-rounded routine has about an 80-20%, you know, 80% cardio, 20% strength training, that means you're doing full body, you know, push-ups or modified push-ups depending on what your strength level is, squats, things that are full body and weight-bearing strength training exercises, but they're not necessarily in a gym or, you know, on gym equipment. So with a very small amount of equipment for a very inexpensive price, you can create what you need to get the strength training that you need.
When is dance or dance exercise classes, when is that aerobic and when is it more like you were describing of the workouts that you, or the practices that you did?
That's a great question. I think fitness dance or cardio dance, as sometimes people call it, is something that is very simple choreography, simple movements that are progressively you add on and there's no stopping. So that's what keeps the heart rate up. You really get a nice feeling that you just keep adding the moves. Whereas true, like a dance class where you're learning difficult choreography, you're going to have to stop and ask questions or try one piece of the choreography over and over again. So maybe you have a burst of a high aerobic moment and then you're kind of looking at it again and so there's a lot of stopping and starting. So fitness dance is nonstop. You're just going for that 20 or 30 minutes, keep on adding steps. So it really does become quite a calorie burner.
I confess I got one of those Dance with the Stars videotapes.
And, oh, how fun.
and I just couldn't do it. It was too complicated. I even gave it to my son, and he tried it, and he threw up his hands. For a person who isn't real good at dancing, how do you find that, as you said, simple choreography that anybody can do?
Obviously, you know, there are a lot of different classes that you could actually take in person or DVDs as well. You want to look at something that is absolute beginner. Just think of it more like, you know, give yourself two or three times with the DVD to get frustrated if you are, you know, a little bit less coordinated or not used to changing your weight quickly. So those things are you know, you got to start small and say, okay, I'm not going to have it perfect this time. But I have a series called Burn and Firm, and it's very much more like basic repetitive steps rather than a lot of fancy footwork and choreography. So it's things like that, and there are many out there that are good. You just want to make sure that it's not something where you're actually trying to learn a certain dance technique or format. So maybe the ballroom was a little bit too much on the step.
Well, the other thing is you shouldn't be too hard on yourself either. You know, I mean, accept the fact that you're not going to be perfect at it and, you know, and just enjoy it anyway. I'm not really that familiar with Ashley's Burn and Firm, but what I saw of it, it looks like she breaks it down pretty good. She breaks it down into simple little movements that you build on, something people might want to take a look at.
One of the points that you make is that you can actually often burn off more calories taking a brisk walk than if you spent the same time with a personal trainer. Can you explain how that works?
Yes. Unfortunately, both Dr. Paulson and I have spent a lot of time in gyms, I guess fortunately and unfortunately. Not only myself working as a trainer, but Dr. Paulson also working out in gyms, you'll often see that a personal training session, the emphasis is on a lot of explanation, a lot of kind of coaching before they actually do an exercise. So in the book, we illustrate how quickly time is wasted. And you could have, in that same one-hour session where you burned maybe 150 calories, burned 300 calories by just taking a brisk walk and doing some stretching and strength training on your own with a lot less money, obviously, in this sort of economic state that the world is in right now. You don't want to just spend money unless you really need the service. And it's something people need to ask themselves, if this is really a service that they need, or can they set up a program on their own that is more sustainable?
Yeah, and the biggest danger is that basically people have a limited amount of time in which they can exercise. And for them to waste time on exercises that are burning very few calories and unfortunately involve a lot of chit-chat that really doesn't get them anywhere. And then for people to go out with the false presumption that they've gotten inadequate exercise, you know, that's just really, you know, the wrong message.
Sounds like you could also compromise by hiring the coach for maybe 2 hours to really teach you the equipment and set up a strength routine, and then do it yourself.
That's a great option, and I especially recommend that to someone that is intimidated if they just joined a fitness facility. Absolutely, take advantage. Usually with the fitness facility, if they, you know, you're a new member, that should be complimentary, that you should have a full hour or 45 minutes where you're having a fitness coach walk you around, explain the machine setup, and go over some basic protocols. Or if you do want to pay for one session because you feel like that's going to help you, you know, and maybe go back every 3 to 6 months and ask for one more session, absolutely. If that is something that will help you, then do it. But a lot of times it's one more excuse as to why you aren't getting the exercise that you need. Oh, I can't afford a gym membership. I can't afford a trainer. It takes too long to drive there. I'm busy. So like Dr. Paulson said, it's one more added excuse to an already busy schedule.
For someone who's having difficulty getting motivated, how well does it work to have a, quote, drill instructor trainer?
Well, you know, the popularity of The Biggest Loser, some of the other reality fitness shows, I think that it really, there is a certain mystique to this, you know, abusive trainer who forces you to do things and you feel like you're going to collapse. I personally think that it's dangerous and I don't prescribe to that mentality. I don't think people need to push themselves to exhaustion to have a healthy lifestyle. It's just not something I agree with.
Why do you say it's dangerous?
Oh, well, I think that, you know, a lot of times it's an ego involved of a coach or an instructor that's pushing people beyond their limits. Let's say that they're one-on-one. Maybe that person is really trying to, you know, achieve what the trainer's asking them to, and they don't know their body very well. Many people don't know certain warning signs. They can either, you know, cause an injury or worse, you know, really have a serious accident and have a heart attack, have I mean, there's major issues that happen in the gym and in training sessions every day, and these people are not physicians. These people are not medically trained usually, and they're asking people to do sometimes dangerous things.
Yeah, in the book, Dump Your Trainer, what we do, one of the things we emphasize is the need to avoid injury. You know, if you're a teenager and you're ready to go into boot camp in the military or something like that, your tolerance for injury is much higher. But once you hit your 30s and up, tolerance for injury is far lower. Your ability to heal is far lower. And the injuries you sustain being pushed beyond what you should be in a personal training program or a boot camp type program, those injuries are going to come back on you. And it's going to make losing weight and staying in shape and increasing your longevity much harder in the future.
Not to say people don't need to be comfortably uncomfortable, you know. If someone has been walking for 6 months and they no longer feel slightly winded, they're feeling like, oh, I could do this for 3 hours, they need to pick up the pace or add a hill or add jogging. You know, definitely you want to feel like, okay, I got a good brisk workout, I broke a sweat. These are all simple indications that you are working at a good level. But to actually have someone push you beyond that level is probably going to cause a setback.
What you were describing is incremental, and at 18 you're also less likely to have a heart attack.
Yes.
The 80-20 rule, you're saying spend 80% of your time on cardio activities, and your preference is do it first thing in the morning?
It's my preference. That's based upon what worked for me and based upon the concept that if you get your exercise in the morning, then you won't run across excuses in the daytime that would have prevented you from doing that later on. So this way it becomes an essential part of your lifestyle, and you get it out and done right away.
And I totally agree. I think that also it does raise your mental alertness. That kind of starts your day already in that powerful feeling where you feel, okay, I've done something good for myself already. So I find with working with people that I've had success in losing large amounts of weight, they feel like they're already starting their day on a positive foot, so they don't want to go and have an unhealthy breakfast or unhealthy lunch. Kind of sets your day up right.
If I were going to do 60 minutes of cardio, would it be better to do it all at once, or maybe do some of it in the morning, some of it in the afternoon or evening to raise my metabolism twice?
The latest research is that splitting it up, if that's possible, can be a higher calorie burner. You're going to have an afterburn from the first cardio session and then also again later in the day. And in the book, Dr. Paulson and I do, especially for weight loss, recommend 2 workout sessions per day. I know that can sound overwhelming, but it's really not. If you look at the overall benefit, especially for weight loss, our focus is on weight loss, that doing those 2 sessions, even if the evening session is shorter, just a walk with a little bit more stretching or strength work, it really does kind of cap off the day well. You know, you did your 2 workouts, you've got 2 afterburns, and also, again, you're less likely to have very overindulgent late-night snack because you put in that work and you don't want to ruin it.
One thing I was a little unclear about is your emphasis is on cardio, but you want strength as well. And you talk about you're going to burn a lot more calories with cardio. I thought that when you build muscle, then the muscle itself is going to burn off more than fat tissue would. Is that kind of an investment by developing the muscles?
That is an accurate statement, in my opinion. The more muscle you have, the more metabolic rate is going to be, and you're going to be burning fat.
Muscle burns more calories than fat, so definitely the more lean muscle you have,
right,
the more you burn.
Right.
It's been so overhyped that, in my opinion, it's been so overhyped because I've had many conversations with people that have about 70 or 80 pounds to lose, and they're focusing on doing bicep curls. And I want to tell them that that's great, but they need to burn more calories. Burning more calories for them is going to be a cardiovascular exercise that they can maintain for 40 minutes, 30 minutes. Yes, you know, the muscle that they build will burn more calories than the fat that they have, but they need to lose weight, and weight loss is really accelerated, especially in the beginning, through cardio.
There's an anti-aging physician, Al Sears, who has a theory that you want to increase your respiratory capacity as much as possible, that that's critical to long-term health. So he says, go all out for 2 minutes, rest for 2 minutes, go all out for 2 minutes again, and that's going to increase your capacity, whereas, say, a treadmill just takes you to a plateau and doesn't take you any further. Does that make sense?
You actually give a different program. You know, interval training, as you just described, is actually, it's a good, you know, it's a good program, but it's not appropriate for everyone. And for people who are, you know, just starting out or getting back into a program or whatever, the tendency for people to quit after that first burst of energy is too high. And so, logically, it makes a lot of sense. From a practical standpoint, it's really not the best choice.
I recommend it for people once they have already hit, are like in our book we describe like the step-up method. Once they're already at a more advanced level in their steady-state cardio, I'm a big fan of interval training.
Absolutely.
And I think that for the right person, I totally agree that, you know, 1 minute really pushing yourself with a sprint and then you go into recovery, it burns the most calories. But like Dr. Paulson said, if I'm 80 pounds overweight, pushing myself that 1 minute, I don't know if I'm going to go back for the rest of the 30 minutes.
Make it for the second minute. Also, you know, interval training is very good in a group exercise environment, like Ashley teaches classes a lot. So you've got the motivation of the other people to keep you going. But on doing it on your own, I'm just not sure that that's the best way to go.
We're talking with sports medicine physician Dr. Mark Paulson and personal trainer Ashley Marriott, authors of Dump Your Trainer. It's a book that gives you the whole package in that it helps you assess where you are, it addresses the fitness part, it addresses the diet part, and really very individualized. And Ashley, you also have dance exercise videos.
Yes.
The book website is dumpyourtrainer.com, it's that simple. And your dance exercise is burnandfirm.com, that's burn, B-U-R-N, just the letter N, and firm.com. Let's take a break for a moment, and then we'll get back to Dr. Paulson and Ashley Marriott. Tired of your organization having the same old pep talks from a motivational speaker? I love making presentations that challenge conventional thinking about aging and help people adopt beliefs that help them think, feel, look, and be more youthful. When you think younger, it shows in your posture, your demeanor, facial expressions, and energy level. And when you feel better, you'll look more youthful and you'll look more attractive. And when that happens, people even treat you better. Let me help you and your employees or colleagues think, feel, look, and be more youthful too. Check out my demo video at antiagingspeaker.com. That's anti-aging-speaker.com. Or give me a call. My phone number is on all my websites. To learn more about any of my services, speaking, personal coaching, books, hypnosis CDs, or my free Defy Aging newsletter, just go to my portal site, notaging.com, notaging.com, and it'll link you to whatever you want. And a reminder, all the previous shows are archived on agelesslifestyles.com, where you can see a summary, guest pictures, find links mentioned on the show, and download or stream the MP3. And finally, be sure to catch my free one-hour teleseminar on October 14th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on how to use anti-aging psychology to be more youthful. Free registration is at healthteleclass.com. And if you missed that link, you can find it at agelesslifestyles.com or notaging.com. And now back to Dr. Paulson and Ashley Marriott. I want to ask you about different kinds of trainers. I got the impression that you were saying that people who have special rehabilitation needs, people who are competitive athletes trying to get that competitive edge, or maybe somebody who needs a certain look for a movie role, they need the expert personal trainers, but average people don't need a personal trainer to get fit. Is that accurate?
I'm not sure that they should be even thinking about the personal trainer in the first place. If you are thinking of a personal trainer for these reasons that you just gave, you especially have to make sure that these people are qualified. And a lot of these trainers out there are not qualified other than maybe taking an online course for an hour or two. If you're talking about somebody who's doing rehabilitation, I mean, you had better be working with somebody who's very qualified and can demonstrate their qualifications, or, in fact, a physical therapist.
How would you pick somebody to meet special needs?
for special needs. I would start with your physician, and then I would go the route that you need to go. If you're going to be, you know, if it's a cardiac issue, a cardiovascular issue, then you, of course, you would want to go to the cardiologist, get probably a stress test, a EKG stress test. I think as people get older, they should also be evaluated by an orthopedist who understands, you know, the problems with joints and the spine and muscles and ligaments and things of this sort. Once they've gotten that, then they can get a recommendation from those people as to whether or not they can handle it on their own, and in most cases they'll be able to, or they need to go to a physical therapist or somebody that the doctor can recommend has the qualifications as a personal trainer to meet their needs.
Are sports medicine's doctors probably the best experts on that?
Again, it would depend upon the particular issue. Again, if it's a cardiovascular issue, then probably you definitely want to be seeing your cardiologist. But yes, a sports medicine doctor is an excellent choice.
And I think the main reason that Dr. Paulson and I wrote this book was to let people know that there's a lot of myths, disillusioned thinking about personal training and what it's going to actually do for you. And what I really appreciate about your website and your information is in that same way that you're talking about aging and the kind of the false beliefs that we have about it, we're trying to let people know that it really doesn't have to be that difficult of a process. We all know that by making the small changes, you know, of looking at your diet, looking at your nutrition, making that time for that walk in the morning. I mean, the difference between maintaining a healthy weight and being overweight, statistics have shown, is as simple as 35 minutes of walking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's really profound, because we're trying to put all these different bells and whistles of go to the gym, get this personal trainer. You know, it's just not necessary. And for weight loss, it can be counterproductive.
And I like the way your approach says whatever works. If you work better at home with a videotape because you've got kids to watch and things, do it. If you're an outdoors person, do that. If you're better at a gym, if you need friends, go with your friends, but find something that works.
Yeah, there's no excuse. We really have too many excuses in this culture when it comes to physical activity. And it's sad and scary because we're seeing the epidemic of obesity in children. And I think that we're really going to be in a terrible spot in the next 15 years if dramatic changes aren't met, you know, along with the food labeling that's going on and hopefully more nutritional awareness, because that's key. But also physical fitness. I mean, whenever I talk to people who are struggling with weight loss, I try to remind them, you know, when was the time you felt best in your body? And absolutely every answer is always at a time where they were physically active.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not an ideal weight, perhaps, but maybe they were playing basketball or they were out swimming. So it's always connected, their mental, you know, happiness to their physical health, how active they were.
And we're seeing more and more research now that says it actually, particularly aerobic, actually stimulates brain cells and keeps you mentally sharper and fends off dementia.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. The research is so exciting about dementia, and they did a study last year with senior citizens learning dance and how they improved their memory. It was really interesting. So I think that is, you know, a wonderful awareness that it is, if you don't use it, you lose it. But if you start using it again, you get it back.
One of the things you talk about is how personal trainers have kind of a conflict of interest in what's in their best interest in terms of an income isn't in your best interest. Could you explain that?
Well, and first I do want to say there are some excellent personal trainers that this does not apply to. But what I've seen is personal trainers who are obviously, you know, dependent on clients needing them. They're looking at it as a paycheck. So if you achieve your goal and you're training with me four times a week, that's going to leave a big hole in my pocketbook. So keeping you dependent upon me, keeping you ignorant of certain exercises, or keeping you in a state of, you know, disempowerment, and maybe you're not quite achieving your goal yet, oh, you need to keep training with me, a little bit of a conflict of interest, because if that person does achieve their goal, they lose their client.
Yeah, and they also go ahead and feed you misinformation, okay, or they'll take these little snippets of scientific information and distort the real message in them. So when you're working with them on a regular basis and you're saying, well, you know, I'm not, you know, here I am, we're 6 weeks into the program. For example, one of the hosts of a popular TV show here is 6 weeks into the program and I haven't lost an ounce. And they turn around and say, well, don't worry about that. Muscle weighs more than fat. You know, this is a distortion of factual information that they use as rhetoric.
For you to get on the treadmill, they're not going to stand and watch you for half an hour or an hour. They don't get paid for that. So it's in their interest to emphasize the strength training, which isn't where the emphasis should be.
Absolutely.
Right. A lot of the exercises that maybe they would want to prescribe, especially for someone that is quite overweight, they really can't have them doing just that, okay, walking on the treadmill for the majority of the session. That's not going to be a very dynamic training session, and the person is going to think, why am I paying this person to watch me walk on a treadmill?
If they were really legitimate, and Ashley points out there are some legitimate trainers out there, they could give you the right program. I mean, I saw an article in, I think it was Self magazine, in which this model, of course, you know, young, fit model, married, now has two kids, but she was going to a trainer 5 days a week, and they were working out 90 minutes a day, and it was almost entirely aerobic exercise plus some strengthening, and her results were fantastic. But who can afford that?
Mm-hmm.
That's something I mentioned in the book. If you have enough money to hire a trainer to develop a real program that, you know, results-based, which means they're going to weigh, measure you, track you, you know, keep you exactly where you're on your goal. So you set up with a goal with them, and they're going to get you there, great. That's a great trainer. And you know what? That is worth something because they are part of that program. But it is very expensive, and a lot of that program is going to be cardio.
That's right. They'll be jogging right along with you.
Exactly.
Up those stairs, up those hills. Okay, and trust me, you know, 95% of the trainers out there are not going to do that with you.
Some of the gyms and Pilates studios, I see these vibration machines. How helpful is that, or is that hype?
Well, I won't name the different brand names, but I have been trained on them, and I have used one in particular. Personally, from my own personal experience, I enjoyed using. It is a vibration technology machine, and it's the same one that has been used with rehabbing for professional athletes. And, you know, certain coaches of basketball teams endorse this product. I found it to cause a real strong reaction of sweat because it does stimulate your lymphatic system because of the pulses and the vibration. So that is something that I would caution people about because you could dehydrate if you're on it longer than the protocol, which is about 10 to 15 minutes. But I did find that it does create an imbalance to the stability because it's moving very quickly. So it is causing your muscles to twitch and react. So there's definitely that something happens when you're on it. I would definitely caution people it's not something that they need to create their fitness program, and it's quite an expensive machine. So I wouldn't say that that's the top of the list for your at-home equipment.
And the real risk is that you try to you use this machine as a substitute for genuine aerobic exercise. I mean, sure. I mean, there's some scientific basis to the design of that particular equipment, and I'm not opposed to it. But again, you know, think that you're going to go down to the gym and stand on the vibrating machine and get your workout. That's just not, you know, you're getting into the wrong frame of mind.
If it's stimulating your lymph system and you keep yourself hydrated, might that have some real benefits for somebody who's fighting some diseases or has some illness they're trying to overcome?
Not sure exactly on the research. I know that they have made certain claims about certain medical aspects of the machine, but I don't know legally. I don't know what actually can say it does or doesn't do. But I think the main purpose, from what I understood of the vibration technology, was helping people to have more balance and muscle stability and using it for rehabilitating injuries because as you're standing on it, it's causing muscular contractions.
Boy, I'm intrigued with, now that you mentioned the balance, intrigued with the idea of using it with elderly people who desperately need more balance.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think that could have some good potential because it has, you know, handles. You can just stand on it, and it causes that imbalance. And you can use it dramatically, you know, kind of on a very low vibration or all the way up. So, it could be a good product for someone that's looking to rehab injury or an older person. But it does, I would put caution around it, especially if you do have health issues.
Talk about personal trainers having a one-size-fits-all approach. For people who are beginning or even intermediate, aren't we pretty much in need of a one-size-fits-all, just adjusting for weight and age and maybe any health problems?
I certainly don't think so, but I think that what we're saying is that, you know, many of these trainers who are offering this type of one-size-fits-all program are really not all that educated themselves and not really qualified to provide a program that is suited to you. You know, as we age, we all have different issues. We may have issues with our spine, we may have issues with our joints, we may have issues with our heart, and all these things have to be taken into consideration when you're designing your exercise program, especially when you're first starting out. So to walk into somebody who's basically going to hear what you have to say and is going to go in one ear and out the other, and then they're going to put you into a, you know, one-size-fits-all program, that's just the wrong way to go.
I think ultimately, and I understand the one-size-fits-all, meaning we all need to exercise, move more, eat less, I agree. That's a one-size-fits-all for weight loss. You know, that is true.
Yeah.
But ultimately, nobody knows their body. You know, the trainer doesn't know someone that they're working with like that individual. And my concern with the one-size-fits-all approach is, let's say I go in to lose weight and I tell my trainer, you know, my goal is weight loss, and they say, okay, let's go down to the chest press and let's start, you know, working your chest. Well, maybe that really is not the body that I'm looking to create. I don't want to build my chest, but this is what this trainer wants to do. And then his mind, you start with the chest, then we're going to do back, then we're going to do quads. You know what I mean? I think that is the one-size-fits-all that is not a beneficial program to each individual.
When it comes to diet, you mentioned that there's a jumpstart diet and a maintenance diet. What's the difference between the two?
Well, the jumpstart diet is more dramatic as far as eliminating more undiet-friendly foods, sugars, more snack foods are eliminated. It's a pretty strict protocol because it's trying to retrain your taste buds, reboot your mind to say, okay, healthy, clean eating. That means not adding a lot of extra fatty seasonings, fatty sauces, no sugars. So it's a strict protocol. Maintenance, you want to have something where you can still go out to dinner, order off the menu, and maintain your program.
Yeah, and in the book, Ashley also goes further in explaining that the ideas behind this initial 21-day program are that you're basically reteaching yourself, that you're forming new habits, and that forming new habits take a certain amount of time in order to basically take effect. So this period is a very important period.
So this is the psycho-cybernetics idea of 21 days is what it takes to make a new habit and get it locked in.
Exactly. Although some people say it's not 21, but it sounds good. I like the 21. Might be 35, might be.
Next week will be something different.
21 is probably the typical case, and
yes.
Some people take longer and some don't.
Absolutely.
And really, I mean, we all know that it's a psychological game that we have to really conquer and sort of have fun with it, because every day is not going to be perfect and you're going to slip up. But I think what's worked for so many people in the past that I've worked with this program is that you are accountable to yourself. So be gentle and laugh when you make the mistake, but you're on a program. So, you know, on day three, you have a setback, but you have day four. And that kind of does that psychological, once you hit the 21 days, you should really feel different about the choices you make. The exercise should be just like brushing your teeth. You're going to get up, you're going to do it. And it really does restructure your day. And by the 21st day, usually people say, okay, this is now working for me. I'm doing this.
A lot of people are probably rolling their eyes and say, have fun with it? How do you have fun with it?
Well, that's people need to throw out the term workout, because it immediately has a negative connotation. And they have to remember that exercise is fun. This is something they had a lot of fun doing when they were younger. And once they relearn that, they will find that it is, in fact, fun. When I start out in the morning, and I'm half asleep before I get going. I'm just, you know, I'm maybe on the treadmill, and I'm, like I said, I'm still falling asleep. To me, that's not fun. That's just being automatic. But as I get going, as my, you know, as my pace picks up, as my heart accelerates, as I wake up, I start enjoying myself, and that is fun.
So it may take 5 minutes to get in the right frame of mind, and then we're back to play like we did as kids.
Yeah, and that's the way you need to approach it. You're not going to get up every day and you're going to say, oh, I'm psyched, I'm, you know, you're going to get up and you're going to say, oh, my God. But you're going to take one step at a time and know that in a very short period of time, you're actually going to start enjoying what you're doing.
What are you guys doing these days professionally?
I've been working a lot on the Burn and Firm project, which is the workout DVDs. Also, I do teach here in Los Angeles group fitness and dance and fun 80s dance workouts, all sorts of fun workouts. So my days are pretty full. I see probably anywhere from 100 to 150 people per weekday, you know, either in classes or sessions. And so I'm constantly learning from them about different techniques to keep people motivated and learn also what is not working for people. I love empowering people to learn what works for them to create health and fitness. So I really enjoy my work.
So Ashley, what have they been teaching you lately that isn't working?
Recently, I became friends with a woman who had a tough struggle. She had illness, which she had overcome, and then some of the drugs she had to take for it caused a 100-pound weight gain.
Mm.
So this is, you know, a terrible challenge because not only was she not in the best health, she was on that recovery, but then the side effect of this weight gain. So really what I learned from her and kind of working with her is that the first 3 months of her getting back into an exercise program, she really needed to prepare herself for setbacks, for a lot of emotional kind of issues that came up with it, and really look at herself as a work in progress and not fall into a quick fix, not fall into a lot of judgment or, oh, wow, that woman did it in 1 month. Why didn't I do it? You know, comparing yourself. And I think that is sometimes the worst way to go into health and fitness is with a real aggressive, comparative mindset. So my best advice to people that have a little bit longer path that they're going to have to be working with is to be very gentle and fun about it. Look at it like a work in progress and really give yourself a lot of kindness because you're doing something that's going to improve the quality of the rest of your life. You're in your body for your life, so you got to learn to love it.
And you're going to extend your life.
Yeah.
I mean, the studies are quite conclusive. You can extend your life many years, you know, 5, 6, 7, maybe even more years just by putting in a little bit of exercise.
So, Ashley, in that case, you were kind of like a mini therapist with her, helping her deal with the emotional ups and downs and the discouragement. Was that in your role as a trainer with her, or was that as a friend?
Well, I think that the cautionary element of this is that I'm not a licensed therapist or psychotherapist. So I actually did recommend that she go see someone, and she did.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would not have felt comfortable delving into issues that I don't have the skill or the knowledge to help her with. But as my role as instructor and friend was just to acknowledge her successes. I also really was proud because all the work she did as far as the main, you know, 5 days a week of cardio and doing all that was on her own. You know, she was doing it without a personal trainer. So I think that was something that is extraordinary because she had to create the program herself that would work with her schedule and her illness and everything else. So my role with just seeing her in class was just to acknowledge and support what she was working with.
Yeah, as you were talking about that, I was thinking that the really good personal trainers are going to be people who are good at handling those emotional ups and downs and just do it seamlessly and naturally and are enormously helpful. I'm wondering if there are also other, you know, for somebody that's not so bad that they need a therapist, if there are other sources that you see people getting that support. I guess part of it might come from fellow classmates. Are there other places?
Yes, I've seen that a lot. And working as fitness director at a facility, I did research on, it's sort of like peer training. So if you make a friend in the class, what is, you know, how does that correspond to the days of weeks that you attend class, how long that you attend? And that's been studied extensively by many different fitness facilities. And there's a wonderful aspect. If you do belong to a gym, a community center, a dance class, that peer friendship and peer coaching is something that works for some people. Typically, it's women respond well to it, and the age range with that was typically, we studied like 30 to 60-year-olds, and it really did help because it became, you know, a pal that motivated them inside the class and also acknowledged, wow, were you sick last week? So it does create a little bit of accountability if you miss a class.
Dr. Paulson, what are you up to professionally?
Well, basically, I'm working on this book, and I'm working on another book, and also working on another concept. So mostly my time is spent in writing.
Are you going to give us a hint as to what the book and concept is?
Well, one is basically, you know, another fitness program book that is more directed more specifically towards women. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is a book that basically instructs people how to identify whether the doctor is a good doctor or not and what they should do to make sure that they have the best doctor for their health.
Excellent. We've been talking with sports medicine physician Dr. Mark Paulson and personal trainer Ashley Marriott. They're the authors of the brand new book, Dump Your Trainer. The website for the book is dumpyourtrainer.com. And if you're interested in the dance exercise that Ashley does, it's Burn and Firm. That's B-U-R-N, the letter N, and firm.com. Dr. Paulson and Ashley, fascinating program. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. And I have to say, you look so very fit. What is your favorite form of exercise?
Well, I've got 8-year-old twins, and we just got the teenagers off to college, so I'm very home-based. I put on a videotape, or I'll to get on the trampoline and watch TV or something, but very home-based.
Oh, the trampoline is excellent exercise, very challenging.
Well, again, it was fun, and I learned a lot. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Bye now.
Bye.
Commentary. What can we say about this program? This book and interview was a wake-up call for me in that I had thought of fitness as about half cardio and half strength, with flexibility and balance being additional considerations. Now I see cardio as the most important factor, with strength and balance and flexibility playing supporting roles. And it's amazing how just in the last few years, a lot of research has come out that shows that cardiovascular activity grows new neurons in the brain and helps prevent or stave off dementia. In politics, we say, it's the economy, stupid. That doesn't mean the economy is the only issue, but it's usually the most important. In fitness, it's cardio. Frankly, I never saw much need for personal trainers. They really do remind me of that interpreter in the movie Bananas or an overly attentive sales clerk. You can make a case that in every profession there's a conflict of interest, and that a doctor or therapist who cures a patient loses a patient. An attorney who settles a case loses the ongoing income, etc. Hopefully, they do the right thing. And they also realize that the word of mouth of their success is likely to bring new clients, and so it has a way of replacing itself, often even more so. Thus, I hadn't seen personal trainers as having any more conflict of interest than other professionals until I read Mark Paulson and Ashley Marriott's explanation of how it's in the personal trainer's financial interest to push strength training, as it is hard to get paid for the cardio. I also was fascinated with Ashley's story about how, even though she was spending several hours a day doing choreography and dance routines, she was gaining weight because she wasn't getting a constant cardio workout. Amazing. Overall, I found their program made a lot of sense, was very comprehensive, and I liked the way it was very flexible about accommodating different personality needs and different styles. In short, I really like it. Baby steps. Each show I try to leave you with some little tweak that'll help you live longer, healthier, and happier, the mission of our program. you probably think I'm going to do the obvious step of saying, hey, do more cardio, do an extra 2 minutes of cardio a day or something. That would be too easy. And since this is a baby step, my challenge to you is to come up with three ways you could make your cardio workout more fun. And then try out at least one of them. So, what are three ways to make cardio more fun? Emails. I love getting those emails. Send them to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. That's radio@agelesslifestyles.com. Emails on last week's interview with health coach Judith Gilchrist focused on weight loss issues and why is it that someone wouldn't just go to Weight Watchers or Jenny Craig instead of a health coach? I think there's two key differences. First, it's the difference between group therapy and individual therapy. Weight loss groups have all the advantages of peer support and feeling you're not alone and that you've got a group pulling for you. However, they usually provide very little individual attention. Coaching gives you the undivided one-to-one attention that is far more individualized. And second, weight loss programs are often built around selling their products, such as frozen dinners and shakes and supplements. Coaching is free to draw upon whatever approach to weight loss the coach and the client thinks makes the best sense. Again, send those emails to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. And I want to remind you the previous programs are on webtalkradio.net. And all of the programs are archived on agelesslifestyles.com. For information on any of my services, go to notaging.com, notaging.com, where you can get a link to my free email newsletter, the Defy Aging newsletter, my books, hypnosis CDs, my personal coaching services, and my professional speaking services. Until next week, this is anti-aging psychologist Dr. Michael Bricky, thanking you for joining us on our quest to live longer, healthier, and happier.